Last presenter of the day is Lauren Brazowski from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she's going to be presenting on a novel method for accelerated biennial vegetable crop seed production. So welcome, Lauren.
Thank you. So biennial vegetable crops include economically important species such as beets, carrots, and onions. However, it is their biennial life cycle that makes breeding and seed production both time and resource intensive. So in this presentation, I'm going to outline a novel method for accelerating these processes. To begin, we'll review the biennial life cycle. So in the first of the two seasons needed to grow, a seed is planted, and at the end of the season, a vegetative propagule is formed. In the case of beets, this is the beetroot, this is what we eat. In onions, it's the onion bulb. Then between seasons, the propagule is vernalized. Vernalization is a cold treatment that induces a change in gene expression that renders the propagule competent to flower and become reproductive. Then, after vernalization, the second season begins, and the vernalized propagule is placed in a favorable environment, which cues the plant to flower and produce seed, thus completing the life cycle. It's not hard to imagine this is neither a quick nor easy process, so we developed a novel method we are calling in situ vernalization. In situ vernalization short-circuits the biennial life cycle by exposing the seedling instead of the propagule to vernalization. So this eliminates the need of producing a propagule and also represents at least a 25% reduction in the amount of time needed to produce seed from these crops. And what this means practically for agriculture is that in typical biennial vegetable breeding, it can take a full 2 years to get a seed crop in the case of plants like onions, and that ties up resources like field space, storage space, and breeder time for those whole 2 years. And even the crops like beets and carrots, where we can fit the whole life cycle into one calendar year, there's very little, a very short window of time for that which that is actually successful, and obviously no room for error. So this in situ vernalization could offer greater time flexibility for breeders. And also, if we can show that because of the less time and less resources this may use, smaller seed producers with less capital might be able to produce these seeds at a greater economic advantage to them. And it might even reduce the environmental footprint of all seed producers for these crops. So to test this, we use three different treatments. One being, of course, the control, where we use established protocols that our lab has done for many years and are highly successful. And then we use two experimental treatments. One where we expose seedlings to vernalization in a controlled temperature cooler, and one where we expose them in a cold frame. So the cooler was for a proof of concept to show that this actually could work given perfect conditions, and the cold frame was to see if we can do this in a less resource-intensive manner since most people don't have a large walk-in cooler. And then for the germplasm, we used three different species, hybrid and open pollinated, because we believe these represent the scope of many breeding programs. And all the germplasm was arranged in a randomized complete block design with 12 replications of each of the cultivars for each treatment. So again, we'll go over the control. So for all of these species, they were planted from seed in the field at the beginning of summer 2013, either at an agricultural research station or a working farm. And then they were harvested at the end of the season and then stored in a 4-degree centigrade dark cooler until December. And that was about 11 to 12 weeks of vernalization. And again, this is a method we've done for years, and it's very successful. Then our in situ vernalization treatments, the two of them, this was the first year we've done them completely, but our methods were built upon a pilot study the previous year. In the pilot study, we attempted to vernalize them in a minimally heated greenhouse, but we had very little success, and we hypothesized it's because there's not enough vernalization. So these two experimental designs I'm going to talk about reflected those observations from that pilot study. So first, the first experimental treatments where we used the cooler, seeds were planted in August, and then after 7 to 8 weeks of regular growth, they are moved to a controlled temperature cooler, also at 4 degrees centigrade, and there's an 8-hour photo period, and they were kept in the cooler for 7 to 8 weeks. We did measure the temperature. We used temperature sensors. The black line is temperature, blue is light, just to ensure we actually got the temperature we were shooting for in this experiment. So we were able to confirm that. All right, so that was the first experimental design. The second was when we used a cold frame. So the seeds were planted in the cold frame the same time in August, and then they were kept in there until it was prohibitively cold. For us, this was about 6 weeks of what we consider cold growth, or growth in which they might have been vernalized. And we did attempt to keep them in there longer by heating the cold frame with manure and covering it with poly plastic poly, but it was not enough to combat our Wisconsin November, so it stopped after 6 weeks. And then after those three different treatments, we brought all of the germplasm together into the same greenhouse, warm, long photo period, and looked for floral initiation. And we observed for a floral meristem until March 8th, which is when, after that point, even if the plants did flower, we won't get seeds early enough to continue to use in our breeding program. So that's the time we decided to cut it off. And then once we did observe a floral meristem, a beet one shown on the board now, we moved it to an even warmer greenhouse to increase seed set. So what did we find with all of this? We found that in-situ vernalization was incredibly successful for beets, but not for carrots or onions. So the black line is our control, and the gray lines are the experimental treatments. And you can see that the experimental treatments were on par for beets, but not for carrots or onions. And I'll go through these numbers. This is an average, so I'll go through these numbers in just a minute. So for our first species, the carrots, we did not have any flowering for any of the in-situ vernalization trials. We found that even though the carrots did grow quite well, they did not flower either because they did not receive enough vernalization or perhaps were not developed enough at the time of vernalization to have that change in gene expression that allowed them to flower. Then for our next species, onions, we had relatively similar vegetative growth across the treatments, but we only had very sporadic flowering in the in-situ vernalization treatments. One interesting thing that we did notice, however, was that in all of the in-situ vernalization treatments for onions, the onions first bulbed before sending up their scape, which is their flowering stalk. So because the number that flowered was pretty erratic, we weren't able to draw any conclusions, but there's currently a graduate student working on a multifactorial experiment with onion vernalization, so hopefully we'll learn more soon. And then finally, beets were our success story. Across the three different treatments, we had consistent time to flowering and flowering rates. And we used Fisher's exact test to see if one treatment was significantly different from the other in terms of number of plants that flowered. And we found no significant differences between any of the treatments for any of the cultivars. So we were able to say effectively that our new experimental treatments, the in-situ vernalization, was just as effective as our control. However, statistics did not account for some of our observations in flower quality from some of the experimental plants. So on the right side of the screen is a picture of beet flowers from a plant that was in the coal frame. And you can see that some of the anthers on those flowers are brown and very dry looking, unlike some of the healthy anthers shown on the other side of the screen, which are full of yellow, healthy pollen. So we did notice that for the coal frame plants, and we suspect it's because it did get quite cold in there, despite our best efforts to heat it. But this result was not uniform, and we were not able to quantify it, but just something to keep in mind about these treatments. Then, irrespective of flower quality, we attempted to produce seed from all the plants that did flower. We also attempted to cross within each treatment group, so cross a control plant with another control plant. But because of differences in time to pollen shed, this wasn't always possible. And then of all the seeds that we did produce, we did seed germination tests. And we found that for every group of seeds produced, there was at least 49% germination, with the vast majority having more than 80% germination, which is more than acceptable for a breeding program, and also proves the concept that we can go from seed to seed while short-circuiting part of the life cycle. So that brings us to say that in-situ vernalization was very successful for beets, and we can absolutely use it for seed increases and other limited breeding applications where we don't need to see the propagule. So that might be maintaining an inbred line. However, despite our success, there's definitely some more questions. First and foremost, or one of the big questions being, is it economically viable? We do know of at least one company using a similar technique for beet seeds, but it'd be interesting to see a full economic analysis of using a coal frame of smaller plants versus planting a field crop. And also be interesting to see what the differences in gene expression are between those plants that were vernalized as seedlings versus propagules, and if there are any differences between those. And also an important question to ask is if the system selects for premature flowering. So recall, beets, carrots, and onions are biennial crops, and when a farmer plants them to grow for market, they do not want it flowering, or else the crop is going to taste terrible and it's not harvestable. So we want to make sure that we're selecting for seeds that only do well in this controlled system where we have a long extended period of cold versus ones that will flower at any sign of cold and could ruin a farmer's crop. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention and thank the rest of the Goldman Lab for their contributions. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Yeah.
Do you know when beets, carrots, and onions actually undergo floral initiation?
Well, it's during the vernalization where the gene expression changes, the FLC gene turns off, and then it's once they get the environmental cue, the light and the heat, that they will begin actual flowering. I'm not sure if that answers your...
It does, but I'm not convinced.
Okay.
I haven't looked at the paper and the literature.
Sure.
I know that there's, for instance, in tall-bearded iris, we found that what we thought required vernalization and floral initiation would occur in the spring. Floral initiation actually occurred due to photoperiod in the fall.
Okay.
Vernalization was required to break the dormancy of that and then get flower.
Okay. I know that, well, for each of these crops, it's quite different. Onion does actually have a longer, dormant period than these other crops. We normally don't produce onion seed within a calendar year period. In general, that one's in a two-year period. This one, we just kept the onions, like the beets and carrots, in that shorter cycle to keep it consistent through treatments. But there's a lot unknown about time needed for vernalization and what actually is happening during these processes. So a big multifactorial experiment would really explain a lot.
The follow-up, I guess, to that would be to separate out the effects of photoperiod your study, you did both at the same time.
You're right.
Interesting to see because the propagule formation is sometimes triggered by one environmental cue.
Yep.
And then floral initiation by another.
Well, in the case of the beets, we had the cooler, where it was 8-hour photo period, and the other one was natural sunlight in the cold frame. So it was two very different photo periods there.
If you're looking in the fall, I grew up in Minnesota.
Okay.
You're looking at short photo periods
sure.
by the time you get into October.
Absolutely.
But anywhere you're.
Yeah.
So you still have a compounding. And since you have growth chambers or coolers, you could put them under long photo periods with the cooler temperatures to see, or vice versa.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a really interesting thing to look at. Thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just by planting bulbs. And they do go to flower within the first growing season. Do you think that it's just because I live in Canada, so it's cooler there during the growing season that they're flowering, or when you plant a bulb, is it already will it just flower because previously
I think it can be a mix. I believe I'm under the impression that if it's actually cold enough for the bulb while it's like planted, it can still vernalize at that point instead of having to have all the vernalization beforehand. So it could be a mix, and I'm not an expert in that, so I don't know the right answer. Yeah.
Can you remind us again what was the temperature in the growth chamber?
4 degrees centigrade, so 40 degrees Celsius, or 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
And did you track the temperature in the cold frame?
Yes, we did.
What was the coldest temperature before you brought the frame?
We waited till it got to about 17 degrees Fahrenheit outside, and that was about a right below freezing within the cold frame. So yeah, we didn't want to kill the plants, so we brought them inside.
But might have killed the flowers.
Yes, it could have damaged a floral meristem. That's why we noticed in the beet flowers that some of the anthers didn't look quite as healthy in those plants.
Any other questions? I have another one, actually.
Yeah.
So, I guess one of your ways of realizing is by putting them outside and just planting the seeds in August, right? And letting them go.
Letting them go through as long into the fall as we could so they'd be exposed to the cold temperatures, but not dead.
Okay. So with some species, you can actually vernalize the seeds. So actually before they germinate, they've already been, induced to flower,
Yeah.
Do you think that in wheat, it was the seed, or do you think they have to wait till seedling stage to...
Just based on how we store these seeds, so we store them in a cooler already for long-term storage, and when we plant them, they don't always flower right away. So I would assume that they have to be a growing plant and not a seed to be vernalized.
Thank you.
Thank you.